shared mobility has a little bit of a challenge sometimes to meet the needs of other demographics. And microtransit is a fabulous one that actually can. And there's lots of different applications. But one reason we love it is because it's actually very appealing for seniors. And there's now a number of studies out of Europe that show that seniors, you know, there's always this idea, oh, they don't like tech-enabled things. Actually not true. You just have to make it easy and you possibly have to give them another route like call instead of just smartphone. But they're quite capable of using their smartphone to book a seat. That's not the problem. They love it because it enables them, especially if you're in a rural area, which most rural areas have higher aging demographic than cities. If you live in a rural area, public transit may or may not come regularly. It certainly will not go too close to your house, which then the older you get, seniors also a huge demographic group, but the older you get, the harder it is. Seniors actually don't mind so much if they have to wait 10 extra minutes. They'd rather be able to meet their friends and stay connected.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a fascinating chat with Sandra Phillips. Sandra is a shared mobility architect and principal of MoveMe, an award-winning agency focused on smart mobility. I last spoke with Sandra in episode 219, which was released in March of 2021. So it was really great to catch up with Sandra and see what she's been up to. Sandra starts off by telling us about her background as a shared mobility architect and some of the work she's been doing with her company, what a smart community means to her, and we discuss how shared mobility can contribute to building more resilient and inclusive communities. We then discuss the importance of involving the community and the need for more creativity when building smart communities. Sandra then tells us a bit more about some of the projects she's been working on before she shares some use cases with us of when on-demand and microtransit have worked well for the community. We finish our talk discussing the emerging trends of smaller shared mobility hubs, an increase in more shared cargo bikes and similar styles of mobility, and lastly, the exciting shift in mobility behavior change that Sandra has been seeing. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Sandra. How are you today?
Hi, Zoe. I'm good. It's like, nice to see you again.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. We were just having a look to see when was the last time that we spoke, and it was 2021, and we talked about shared mobility and your company, and we were still kind of in the depths of COVID, which obviously, you know, people are still in the depths of the pandemic at this stage. But yeah, I'm so glad to have you back on the podcast.
Yes, happy to be back. We've been following, everybody on my team has been following the podcast since then. So it's awesome to be back.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay, well, let's just jump straight in. Can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
All right. What we call a shared mobility architect, which really is just a person designing or co-designing shared mobility services. And when we talk about shared mobility, really doesn't matter what type of vehicle. It can be anything from, you know, a bike, kick scooter to a bus, as long as it's tech enabled and connected and you can share it either simultaneously or consecutively, it's shared mobility. I've been in the space for, God, like the last 12 years, almost 13 now. And the one thing I tell everybody is like, I haven't gotten bored. It's still as exciting as back then. I will say maybe the focus has shifted a little bit on like the content and how we approach projects, but it's still the same. We do two things essentially. One is co-design. So we become an extension of a team, and that can be, you know, a very light engagement, or it can be a project where we really take the reins on, where we build. So a good example, or a couple good examples, is we work with the Public Transit Authority here in Metro Vancouver. I should have actually said I'm based out of Metro Vancouver in Canada. And so we work with the public transit agency and three shared mobility providers, two car share organization. One is similar to GoGet. The other one is a free floating concept. If you're in New Zealand, you know Mevo. It's kind of the evil. Ours is called Emo. And then a bike share. And it's like, how do you connect now public transit with these new forms? And, you know, in the first iteration, we did this very simply through the fare card. Now in the second phase, it's going to be more digital. Can't say too much because we're under RFP blackout at the moment. So hopefully that gets signed soon. So that's a project we're co-designing. Another one where we're supporting kind of a transition is actually based out of Australia, Bike-O, an electric bike share in the south of Australia, which we're a huge fan of at the moment. It's probably our favorite micromobility vehicle, like electric bikes versus the scooters or just traditional bike, because you just open up so many more use cases and it opens it up to more demographics. And then the second stream, so I talked a lot about the co-design. The second stream that we're doing is what we call the educational stream. Because we realized we've been involved in about 70 projects by now. And we've realized that one of the things is people tend to think they know exactly what shared mobility is, but there's a lot of different understanding. And there's also a little bit of a shiny object syndrome, you know, like, especially on the municipal side, it's like, oh, I don't want to miss out. My neighboring municipality has like a kick scooter project, but that neighboring municipality has invested hugely into safe bike infrastructure. So it makes sense. We haven't. So then it makes actually not much sense. So we used to do in-person workshop and we shifted that to online, obviously in the last 2 years, but that's a second area. And at least in the North American context is gaining traction, which just also tells us that shared mobility as a whole in North America is gaining traction, right? Europe is a lot further ahead than North America. So yeah, I think those are the two areas we're working in. I did mention, sorry, I can also save that for later.
No, it's been great. I love hearing about the project and thing you're doing. And I think we will dive into a little bit more, a lot more there. And I'm also keen, you know, just some insights onto doing these projects and understanding of shared mobility. I think the audience also would be really keen to dive into some of that as well. But I want to go broad first, which is, what is a smart community to you?
Smart, and obviously I'm very focused on the transportation side of things. A smart community to me is a community that uses infrastructure smartly. And to do that, you ultimately have to connect it. And I think this is a little bit of a historical, right? We gave so much space to the individual car. And there's some cases, there's good data points on how you can now shift, because there's a lot more different type of vehicle, even if they're not in the share context, there's a lot more. So how do you now make the infrastructure that you have used better? But even if you're thinking about infrastructure, like public transit is infrastructure. So if you then, how do you connect those services with all these emerging services and become an ecosystem that ultimately, we always say, you don't want to be locked in. And I think if we as MoveMe's team learned one thing during the pandemic, we always talked about, you know, it's a great combination and a great fit. I think the one thing we didn't fully understand until the pandemic is that it actually makes a smart community is also a more resilient community, because you're not locked in to one mode or the other. And that project that I mentioned earlier, that Shared Mobility Compass car project, was a great example, because we had one client were essential workers, nurses, and they allowed them to use any of the modes, the bike share, the public transit, the car share. Guess what they did during the first 2 months of the pandemic? Well, they all switched to bike share because that felt the safest, just to prove the point. Like, now you also have a more resilient community of offering. So that's what a smart community to me is.
Yeah, I think picking up on the resilience there is really a key point. And I'm having more and more conversations about that now as well. And obviously, yeah, focus on transport, and that's what we'll focus on because in this podcast. But I think, you know, mobility really serves, like, as you were just talking there, it was like essential workers getting to work it's not just about, you know, the mode, but it's about having that more resilient network so then we can continue to be mobile. And I think the other thing, and live our lives essentially, not just, you know, moving around for the sake of it. I think the other thing that the pandemic really showed us is that mobility is not just physical, but it's also digital. And then if we have good mobility in those areas, then the social mobility can happen as well. And I think that's a really key one. And I think with thinking about our transport network differently with these new options that we have available, that they are, you know, public transport services or can be integrated into the public transport network, then we can actually not just have different conversations, but actually the action can then, you know, feed into creating a better, more resilient network for the future.
Yeah, totally. And it's also, you know, going back to the social mobility and the meeting the needs of, let's say, the essential worker. I think the other thing we learned is that, and honestly, partly because we connected services and now we have data points or better data points, maybe not enough yet, but better data points, is that we realized that what we've designed for the last, let's say, 50 years is all geared toward commuting and one, ultimately, the professionals that commute 8 to 5. And as soon as you get outside of those, you know, let's say you have night shift or graveyard shift, or you have, which in the case of nurses, you do have, or you have seniors that still need to be moving so they're not isolated. I think we also realize that we do need these new forms of transportation, like whether it's shared mobility or ride hailing, like Uber and Lyft, they do meet the need and they increasingly can actually, I hate to say fill the gaps because that's not, but they can do certain things that traditional public transit that's just geared towards like move as many people as possible during certain periods of time, just will never, it's not cost effective to do that. So why not use the other options to do that? Which just ultimately to wrap this statement up is I think it also, we're focused more on like, how do we make this more inclusive? This ecosystem that we're building, and don't again lock us in to, you know, one pattern or one use case, but think broader.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I'm doing some work at the moment actually on that kind of mobility package for people and like, you know, ride hailing, for example. And obviously, we're also thinking, and you'd be in a similar frame of mind, particularly working with different councils and, you know, state governments, that we're on this trajectory towards, you know, net zero as well. That has to feed into it. So what choices can we make now to actually get there? Because if we keep going the way we're going, we're never going to get there, no matter how many electric vehicles we have. There's all this other stuff that needs to go in there and changing our behaviors and how we move. And then, like you said, you know, the ride hailing, for example, if that fits in somebody's mobility package, supplements it, or it complements public transport rather than competing with it. In what cases and what things can you do to actually make that the case? And I think that is where when we have these more like, I guess, holistic conversations and, you know, ecosystem conversations, then that's when, you know, we can make real change. Because otherwise, if you're just like, oh, I'm all about, you know, scooters, or I'm all about buses, or I'm all about, you know, I just want to drive my car, whatever, we need to really like crack open that, because we still want to like that inclusivity piece as well. We want people to be able to conveniently travel, or we want them to make the best choices, so we want to make it really easy for them to make the most sustainable choice where they can do so. And then maybe sometimes they still do have to make, you know, a private vehicle choice because of their circumstances, but we make it the rest of the ecosystem as easy and convenient as possible. So then those trips are less and less over time. And for some people, maybe they don't need a car at all. And I think that's where, when we start having those conversations and really thinking about the context, not just a blanket statement that, oh, well, everybody should do it this way, I think that's when we can actually make real change. And you need to have those different people from those different areas, or making the decision makers, we know the community also need to be part of that, like part of those decision making conversations. And then I think that's where we can, yeah, actually really shift the dial a bit if we can see those tangible changes happening.
And I think that last piece that you just mentioned, the community engagement, I actually think it's key because going back to my earlier point, we have more pressure on the infrastructure that we have. Like, you know, we can't, yes, in certain cases, you can keep building out, but let's just use Vancouver, which is a North American city, and the myth is, oh, North American cities have so much space, you can just keep building. Actually, we can't, because one side we have an ocean, on the other side we have mountains, and then there's a river. So actually, and then there's a border, a U.S. border. So that's it. We can't grow. We got to be smarter on how we're doing things. But with that, as I said, there's this notion or this idea that the curve belongs to me. I don't know when that happened or why we think that, but it is in every city. It doesn't matter if people are European or North American. It always happens. It's like, this is my spot right outside. Now, actually, it's the public space. But if you can make them part of it, like one group, which I find so interesting, what they're trying to do is essentially, you know how park benches are like, you can donate and you can build a park bench. And then it's like in memory of, you know, Sandra Scrama. So they're thinking of doing that for bike share infrastructure, which takes away parking spots. So you as a community member, you can essentially donate to have a bike share station and it gets a plaque, whatever, you know, details need to be figured out. But I think that's such a smart way of getting the community to be part of, right? One thing is community engagement, got to do that. But what can you do even more that they feel like I didn't give up my parking spot, I actually gave my community something back. And I think it's so critical. We got to be more creative, I think, as a whole of how we're bringing people in. So we don't have, we're working on a project in Europe where part of the team, they're city officials, and they just did an initiative called Cleaning Up the Neighborhood, which basically means take a few parking spots away for shared mobility. And guess what happened in the two neighborhoods? Every single bike tire got slashed, like every single one. So like, we got to figure out a way of getting people to be part of it and feel like they're gaining rather than they're losing.
Yeah. And people don't want it to happen to them. They want it to happen with them and that they are inputting into it and the best outcome for everybody or, you know, the majority. And I think you said something about we need to be more creative about this, and that's so true. And I think that's why, you know, no one's ever been so interested in transport. I mean, with autonomous vehicles and all this kind of stuff, we need to harness that creativity and not keep doing it the way we've done it. Yes, you need that, the platform, the basis, the foundations of transport planning, but we still didn't really, we haven't quite got that right because, you know, we had all these policies that were around cars and we straight, like, we took out the tram tracks because we needed to make space for cars or whatever. And now we're going back. And so it's actually really being creative about the things that we can do. But then, yeah, you've got your walking, cycling, all those type of things that we need to really focus on and the place and where that's happening. But then we have to really think about how we integrate that into these new ways of doing things and all that kind of stuff as well. But then how we weave in this, I guess, this basis for transport planning, but using the data and the community engagement, this like smart community approach, I guess I'm trying to say, which is a radical level of community engagement, using data in a different way, a smarter way. And even thinking about, well, okay, we don't have that data now, or that data is not serving our purposes, or, you know, we used to use it, but actually there are better, you know, sources available. You have to have those conversations really early, because if it's going, you know, if you're going too far down, it becomes too late, in inverted commas. I don't think anything's ever too late, but it's like, oh no, we're already down this path. We've built the, you know, whatever. But I think we do really need to think more and more about this and more creative ways to input, because there's no, you know, nothing's static, right? We don't just keep doing it the way we've done it. And I think the industry is getting this bit of a shake up. Engineering and, you know, the traditional things are getting a shake up. And I think that's a good thing, but we want to bring in that expertise, that knowledge, bring in the translators, I call them, and then this like kind of smart, you know, approach over here as well.
And it's so true. And I was going to say, there's like, you mentioned this before, behavior change, right? And when we think behavior change, we always think like, we got to educate everybody to not use their car. Like, I'm being very simplistic, but it's the end user. I actually also think there's behavior change in the professional, in the, on the industry side, right? There's, as you say, it's like planners and engineers are used to doing it a certain way, long range plan, that's all important. But again, if the pandemic, and actually in British Columbia, the last 2 years didn't just have a pandemic. We had heat domes last summer, which basically were unprecedented. Then we had floods, which basically took out our entire highways. And we're the, like, Vancouver is the biggest, most active port. So it disrupted not just the region, but it disrupted, you know, goods movement all across the country. And they built that back, which kudos to the Ministry of Infrastructure and Transportation. They got them back up and running. So it happened, I think, at the end of November. By Christmas, they were back up and running. Now, Grant, and you built differently, right? Obviously, you're an engineer. You know that things that get built quickly get built differently. But it was more important to do that lifeline and then do something about it after than to just be like, yeah, but this is the process. And I think what I'm trying to say is, like, we figured out when there's crisis, whether it's a pandemic or a flood or whatever else, we figure out how to deal with that flux and that we don't know, and we come together, and all of a sudden bureaucratic process on the, you know, getting like highway permits to build normally take months. They got done in like 3.5 hours. It got signed off. All of a sudden that's possible. And I think that's what, going back to my comment about behavior change, I'm not suggesting that we need to fast track everything like in a way of crisis, but it would be nice to take some of that out and realize we can also do it differently. And sometimes it actually might make sense, and it might make sense to not strive for perfection from the start and basically kill everything that's not perfect, but just build something and build upon it to get to perfection over time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when you bring in that creativity, you're bringing different voices and you know, voice of community, but also, like you said, the industry, then we can do it differently. And bringing in people that have done it in different ways, you know, and they learned lessons from it. I'm thinking crisis, for example, you know, bring in what, you know, when people have seen it's possible, then they can, and, you know, like you said, it's not necessarily going to happen that way every time, because it obviously, you know, takes an immense amount of resources, immense amount of focus. We want to make sure things are quality, standard, rigorous, all that kind of jazz as well. But when people, you bring in people that have seen that it's possible, then they no longer think this is impossible. They think this is possible. What are the steps that I need to put in place to make it happen? And I think in this, you know, smart city, smart community field, and in the mobility in particular, I think we're having more and more conversations about that. And I think it is kind of, yeah, now it's moving into that real action, because we go, oh, okay, it is possible, you know, but what things do we need to put in place to make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about some of the projects and things you've been working on. Obviously, you've already told us about a few of them, but keen to hear a bit more.
So we always have like quite a plethora. I'm trying to pick smartly. I think one of the projects that's exciting for us as a team is we've been working for the last 12 months with the state of Luxembourg and the car share organization there. So now, you know, the obvious thought is, oh, Luxembourg is in Europe, must be all connected, you know, the European utopia that everybody, actually not. It's one of the, I think it's average 3.5 cars per household. So it's very car centric and has a lot to do, like, public transit is free. They have an absolutely gorgeous public transit system. It's super well connected. Has more to do with the fact that people can just afford, you know, multiple cars. And it's incentivized in lots of ways. Like, you know, parking is free in a lot of areas outside of your house. You can just park another car if you don't have space and drive it. So it's more of that issue than not being a small community that's well connected. So the objective of the ministry is to obviously shift that, partly because they have huge congestion issues and people, you know, that drive 20 kilometers, it takes them 2.5 hours depending on time of day, which is ridiculous. You may as well just, I don't know, bike. Anyways, it's just like absurd to me to think that somebody sits that long in traffic jam. But the interesting thing in that project is that we get to work with the ministry on changing the regulations and making sure that they're supporting car share, because the other thing we realized is they're not allowing car share vehicles to be parked anywhere except at train stations, which is great, except that in a lot of places, the train station is not right downtown or in the center. Like the city, so Luxembourg is like the city of Luxembourg, and then it's about, I think, 50 small communities around. That's the state. And in those smaller communities, they're not right downtown. So they're not where people live. And so if I have to walk 20 minutes to get the car share vehicle when I want to go shopping, I don't do that, right? It's round trip car share. So the one thing is we're working with the ministry to essentially allow it to be where people live, that the vehicles get parked there to grow it. But the nice thing is we also get to work with the car share operator, which means we now can translate what's happening on the regulatory side into actual better service. Often our and I'm saying this is exciting because often our projects are disconnected. So we either work with the regulatory body, but not the service provider, or we work with the service provider, but not the regulatory body. And then you always have like kind of a disconnect in how far you can push. This is great because we can work with the ministry making the adjustments and work with the provider to make the necessary adjustments. So that's a really exciting first of its kind, quite honestly, for MoveMe project. Another one that's really interesting that I haven't mentioned is, you know, I know that scooters have like this, everybody wants to scoot. Well, either you hate them or you love them. Let's just put it out. And obviously the biggest issue is clutter and just the way, I think the way they've been deployed in the first phases, right? They just got deployed in the free floating scheme, which just causes a lot of issues with other, whether a pedestrian or people in wheelchairs or people, all sorts of, or people with strollers, all sorts of other people using the sidewalks or the bike infrastructure. And so we've been very careful and mindful when and how we're working on micromobility. But one of the projects we're working on is for a tourist region in British Columbia. And their challenge is that during high season, so there's about 30,000 people living in that area, during summer, that increases by about 200%. So what happens, people drive there, then they have their vehicle there. There's not really good public transit because the community is too small. You don't build public transit for just 3 months of the year. You build it for the rest of the year. So there's not good ways of getting around with public transit. There isn't a good business case for car share either, quite honestly. It's not financially feasible. But there is a very good business case to bring micromobility in. Now, in their case, they wanted to kick scooters because it's like, as I said, a little bit shiny object syndrome. But it makes sense, right? You have them, people get them at the resorts. They're not parked anywhere. They're just at the resorts. And then they can move around and they don't need to bring and move the car around, which cannot be parked anywhere because it's too much of an influx. So that's a really interesting project for us. And then maybe the last one is on the microtransit DRT side. This is more of a part of the second stream, the educational. So we were fortunate to be hired by somebody that wanted to workforce development in like how the microtransit actually really fit in. Because it doesn't make much sense in like, let's say, Vancouver to put a microtransit service up, except for niche use cases. But it makes a lot of sense if you want to connect rural communities, suburban communities, if you want to serve seniors better, it makes a lot of sense. So that was a really exciting because it was like it's 65 employees that go through this training now and have a better understanding of how, where it fits best and what use cases it can really serve. I think those are, yeah, three on top of my head that I'm really happy that we're getting to work on.
Yeah, they're so interesting. And like just picking up quickly, I love the first one working both with the regulator and then the like the vendor or the supplier because, you know, they talk different, they potentially can talk different languages because that's the world that they're living in. So having that translator in the middle is so important. And I think we can learn a lot from that approach in lots of different projects, not just, you know, mobility. And then the second one around the second one?
Micromobility in tourism.
Oh, yes. Sorry. My favorite. I was just thinking about like places that, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, like you said, bringing that use case in and where it makes sense to do so, it's not just one or the other, is really key. And also, like, yeah, just really thinking about those things and then choosing the best option for what actually is going to help in that circumstance, which is why that context is so important. And again, we can learn a lot from that in a whole bunch of other projects. And then, yeah, I guess like the last one, those use cases for kind of on demand, keen to kind of, we don't have a heap of time left because I want to talk about the future, but I guess for people that may not really get what on-demand transit is, microtransit is, can you give us a little bit of an explanation, some of those use cases that you know, it works really well for?
Mm-hmm. So maybe let's just get what exactly is on-demand transit. I know there's lots of definitions, and I'm trying to keep it simple. It's essentially use a carpooling platform and you put it on a small bus. And so now it's connected and you book a seat on the bus when you need it. There's lots of flavors, like it can come to you, it can be a virtual flag stop that you have to go to. Like there's lots of flavors of microtransit, okay, which you then tailor to the needs. But the reason we're really excited, and when I say we, that's the MoveMe team is excited, because it actually, shared mobility has a bit of a challenge often that it serves the same users that already have a lot of options, you know, downtown. Like if you think about where is all the Lime, the Birds, the Neurons, the Uber, the Lyft, they always want to go to big city, which already has great transportation service. You're like, what's the point? They already have lots of options. Plus, because they're a little bit price point often is at a higher level, it often appeals to, you know, younger professionals. People with families or with little kids, they often drop off because then they can't get their kid moved around. Seniors struggle with it because it's super techie. So what I'm trying to say, shared mobility has a little bit of a challenge sometimes to meet the needs of other demographics. And microtransit is a fabulous one that actually can. And so if we're talking about different, there's lots of different applications, but one reason we love it is because it's actually very appealing for seniors. And there's now a number of studies out of Europe that show that seniors, you know, there's always this idea, oh, they don't like tech-enabled things. Actually not true. You just have to make it easy and you possibly have to give them another route like call instead of just smartphone. But they're quite capable of using their smartphone to book a seat. That's not the problem. They love it because it enables them, especially if you're in a rural area, which most rural areas have higher aging demographic than cities, right? If you live in a rural area, public transit may or may not come regularly. It certainly will not go too close to your house, which then the older you get, right? Senior is also a huge demographic group, but the older you get, the harder it is. Seniors actually don't mind so much if they have to wait 10 extra minutes. They'd rather be able to meet their friends and stay connected and be able to go see. So there's a number of studies out of Europe specifically where rural aging demographics love microtransit. I think the other application that is really interesting is business parks. This is a huge challenge in North America and in Metro Vancouver as well, right? Often public transit feeds to certain core centers, but sometimes business parks are outside of that because big spaces are cheaper. And then they're not as well connected and they're struggling to maintain and retain employees. And microtransit, in that case, it sometimes is run by public transit, sometimes it's actually run by a group of employers that just team up and get the van. But they now have ability to provide service specifically also to kind of more essential workers that may, you know, it's a significant expense for them to have a car just to commute to work. So they have better productivity, they have more relaxed workforce, and they're able to retain. So it becomes an attractive package beyond the fact that they also can work on their greenhouse gas reduction strategies or sustainability strategies. So those are two applications we love. There's lots of other ones.
No, I like that. And I think, again, linking it back to those outcomes that we're trying to achieve, and it all feeds in together. It's not just about being able to get to work. It's the stress, the environment that it creates, the talent retention that it can offer. And, you know, who would have thought that those things were related? But if you look at the data, they are, and as in, like, you know, being able to get to work. And sometimes we take it for granted if we can drive and park right outside our, you know, office or whatever, or we have options available. Whereas when you don't and then you do, those things can really make a huge difference in all those areas. But then, yeah, also making, like, having that goal of sustainability and, like, as a global issue. So we need to think of more creative things and come up with more creative things. And again, like you said, it's not, none of this stuff is necessarily super complex. It's just that it's a different way of doing things. And you need different people to kind of come up with things and then design the system to actually work for people. And one of those key parties is the people that are going to use it and what would make them use it or not. Or, you know, sometimes you don't know that. And so you have to test and try things out to be able to go, oh, well, actually, no, I don't like it when it does this or that. But then really listening to that feedback as well is really key. Now, I think we need to zoom to the future now. Tell us about the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough.
So there's a few things that I think we are excited that they're gaining traction. And I'm going to maybe just pick three because of time. There's a few more. And the first one is mobility hubs. Now, mobility hubs is not something new at all. But what it's often thought of is like public transit and then some other, like making sure that you have pedestrian infrastructure and cycling infrastructure, maybe have a couple car share cars parked or like pick up drop off zones. It's often in the context of a larger transportation station or public transit station. What we're excited about, it seems like there is a bit of a shift in understanding that actually smaller shared mobility hubs where people live in residential areas are gaining traction. It's ultimately going back to your earlier point about convenience, is bringing the different modes to where I live. And then I can connect, you know, from there to the big public transit line or the, you know, SkyTrain or Metro, whatever it is. But you're taking away the hurdle for me from getting where I'm based, basically, to that. And then, you know, my default choice is going to the car because it's too complicated. So I think that's one that we're very excited and we're, you know, we'll have to see. There's also, I think there's a shift in thinking. As I said, mobility hubs used to be public transit only and then build around, where now it's like, actually, maybe we need other smaller hubs. So that's one. The second one is that utility vehicles all of a sudden are kind of like, they're not glamorous. I'm trying to think of the right word. They're rolling up the field from behind. You know, whether that's cargo bikes that all of a sudden getting into shared schemes because you can move quite honestly your kids all of a sudden, which, as I said, sometimes we struggle with keeping families, but we get a cargo bike, you can totally do that. Whether that's, you know, small vans, then quite honestly, they serve the you and me as, you know, individual users, but they also serve the small business community. And if we think about it, right, the majority, I think 90% of businesses are small or medium sized. And we don't necessarily want them to have their own fleet. It makes more sense to have it kind of in a shared context. I also think because then it's more doable to do it, to have electrified vehicles versus it might just be too expensive, right? Otherwise. So that's the second one, which we're watching. That trend has just literally every shared provider we know and we've been working with throughout the last 2 years, that's their fastest growing segment. So we're watching where that's going. And then I think the last one goes back to the behavior change. So one of the areas, and this has a lot to do with us as a team trying to figure out, okay, how do you change behavior? And I know everybody talks about nudges, but I don't think it's just. And so I think BI, behavior insight, is moving into that. Because, and quite honestly, behavior insight is just a really rigorous way of doing A-B testing around small little changes, you know, whether it's you're simplifying the messaging. And so, for instance, for seniors, it all of a sudden becomes super clear of what they have to do, or whether or not it's just making sure that the, as I said, the vehicles are outside where I live to remove the friction of getting there. Like, there's so many different ways. And I think it's a good thing that Behavior Insight team out of the UK is gaining traction across the globe and is starting to moving into transportation projects. So yeah, for instance, one of the really interesting examples is out of the US. So they try to increase transit ridership. And you know, they didn't use any fancy app or any fancy tech. All they did is they sent Zoe in the morning a personalized trip plan of how to get from your house to work, which bus you take, where you and they had a significant increase, statistically significant enough to have an impact. It's such a simple thing, right? It's not high tech. It's actually very low tech. So I think that's the other area that is emerging, budding. We see where this is going, but it's exciting. It's exciting that they're part. To your point, you need different people at the table, right? And you need different schools of thoughts of how we change the way we move around to really have an impact.
Yeah, no, totally. And there's so much in that. And I think it's really watching these trends is really important. But then also, like you said, like getting in, seeing the action, learning the lessons and then seeing what else we could do differently is also key. So I love that. And I think we should leave it there. Thanks so much, Sarindra, for coming onto the podcast. I really enjoyed this convo. I think we could talk for a lot longer. As we know, we'll have to keep it shorter between chats so we can have another chat soon. And hopefully we can be in the same place at the same time physically at some point as well. But one last question, how can people connect with you?
I think the best way is actually LinkedIn, I will tell you. And if you just Google Sandra Phillips, I can also share LinkedIn, but Sandra Phillips, MoveMe, you'll find it. MoveMe is M-O-V-M-I. If you want to follow what MoveMe is up to, then the best way is the website, www.movmi.net, movemi.net.
Excellent. We'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Thanks again for coming onto the podcast. And yeah, I really look forward to, I guess, continuing this conversation because I think there's so much in it. I love following along. You're doing some amazing stuff in the industry. And yeah, I just love hearing about the projects and things you're doing. So I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Zoe. It's been a pleasure. As I said, likewise on our side, we've been following smart communities. So that's it's awesome. Cross-fertilizing. It's all about that.
Collaboration. Well, we better say goodbye. So we'll talk soon. Talk soon. Bye.
Sounds good. Bye, Zoe. Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.